Welcome to the American Center for Elemental Music and Movements podcast. This is where the ASEM team and friends discuss playful, elemental, process-based music and movement education ideas for all ages. We're so glad you joined us. Welcome back to the American Center for Elemental Music and Movements podcast. And today we're having a help cast to talk about
talking
when kids are always talking. So it's curious and ironic that our podcast is going to be talking about talking, and also time, like, really relevant, because we're in talking with our colleagues. They're saying they're having a lot of problems with the students in their classes in certain grade levels who just are constantly generating sound with their voices. And so I thought that would be something that would be helpful for us to talk about and maybe unpack a little bit together. So
can you tell them who you are first?
Oh, yeah. My name is Drew Bullington. I am the president of ASEM, and I'm here today with my colleague Lisa Semsey.
Hello.
And so I got so excited about talking about stuff that I forgot to talk about who I was.
Exactly. There was just a lot of talking going on. But, that's really on brand for today's podcast. So I guess we're asking the listeners, can you think of a class, a grade level, or a pocket of students who just talk all the time? Sometimes they probably don't even realize they're still talking, and how that may interrupt the flow of classes. But at the same time, what do we do to help them engage in the learning in a productive way and not, rain on their parade completely too? I mean, they have to learn, but how do we do it in a caring way?
Yeah. And I think part of it comes from, so many things seem to turn around with a back arrow to the times of the pandemic, when everyone had a screen and they could talk all they wanted and the people on the screen wouldn't hear them. And I wonder how much of it has to do with that. One of the teacher friends of mine said, these kids, I stood in front of them and said, you won't stop talking no matter what. I'm not on a screen. You're not on a screen. I can hear you. Everything that you say, you are not muted. And it's interesting if you think of all the different calamitous sounds that were in everyone's house during that teaching time and how they were able to mute that. And now that's not happening. And I wonder if there isn't a muscle memory reflex thing that's happening there.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought, because I wasn't coming at it from that angle.
Yeah.
But let's explore that a little bit, and then we can circle back to another angle of why sometimes kids won't even stop. They don't even realize it. Innocently, sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not, out of malice. But I never thought about that, they've been on mute and there was sound behind them and nobody could hear them, and what that is. I think sometimes it's craving connection that they're not getting.
I feel it has a lot to do with anxiety and feeling unsettled and unable to focus, that they have overstimulation on so many levels.
Which comes back to screens.
Correct. And when they hold a screen, they're playing games, or I've noticed when kids are using iPads or whatever in my classrooms, a lot of times they have their headphones on, so they have their own world, which they don't hear other sounds coming in, but they are all the time vocalizing responses to what they're taking in. So they have this place of interacting visually and auditorily and kinesthetically with their screen game world experience that does not preclude them from making sound with their voice. Like, that is not a hindrance.
Well, and a lot of times when they're doing activities on iPads or technology, there's some sense of instant gratification instead of delayed through sustained focus. Mm-hmm. So it could also be a sustained focus issue, right?
Yeah.
They haven't developed that skill from the time they were small, because we could take that left turn back to the pandemic again of life was interrupted in such a way, and their sustained focus, they haven't developed that the same way without the instant feedback. So if they're playing these games on iPads, which could be content and curricular related, but every time they get an answer right, something happens,
right,
or they gain points or coins or whatever it may be, their focus is being interrupted because it's in short spurts. as opposed to the work of what we're asking them to do in class, where there's gratification, but it takes some time to get there.
And patience and discipline to control. Like if they have a drum or if they have a xylophone or if they have some kind of like a recorder or whatever, they are not able to stop themselves from like reactive stimuli response cycles.
Sure.
And it's interesting also, a colleague of mine who I was talking with mentioned that they think there might be some connection to the way that students are looking to their peer in terms of kids who are their same age, who are content creators on YouTube.
Oh, sure.
Who are giving them rundowns on how to do their nails, do their hair, build their skateboard ramp or whatever it is that they're learning. The students are learning very intense content and ideas from their peers online. And the hypothesis of my colleague was, what if the kids are learning to trust more the content creators on YouTube who are their peers than the adult influences in their lives? So they are looking at adult influences extraneous and unnecessary. And I'm curious about that. I don't think it's a novel thing that's happened, because all of humanity has always had kids who don't want to listen to adults and who want rather to listen to the cool kids in the neighborhood, right? It's just interesting that the access that they have to children, multiple different varieties of children, not the same kids down the street or whatever, like maybe when I was a kid, just a different experience. And I wonder how much of that plays in to the children who are always making sound, always talking.
Well, and if they're engaging with that kind of content, which a lot of kids are, I mean, and they're learning legitimately, they're learning. If there's nobody else in the room with them, all of that self-talk comes out. I mean, it's the Austin Powers moment, right? Like, do they have their inner monologue, you know, and how do we develop that with students of the patience before saying those things? Mm-hmm. And how much are they left alone to their own devices with things where that self-talk comes out, mm-hmm. as opposed to interaction with other humans, which was where I was thinking, mm-hmm. was, you know, we're in a society where there's very split parenting, and there's a group of parents who there's not a lot of tech, or it's very controlled, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of side-by-side activities, and they cook together, and they do gardening together, and they're in any organization together. And there's a lot of parents who the technology is there, and they're not doing it because they don't want to parent necessarily, but it is something that takes attention, and children are differently behaved. I'm not going to call it well-behaved, because it's differently behaved, right? Because they're consumed.
Yeah.
They appear quiet, but they're just consumed by what's going on. And are the kids talking because their inner monologue isn't working, or are they talking for connection? Which in the cases that I have right now, sometimes they're talking for connection. I think of a particular upper grade level. We were just doing a four-person game. We were playing Draw a Bucket of Water. Mm-hmm. Super fun. Gets a little silly at the end with the frog in the bucket portion. Right? Like super fun. And they couldn't hear the directions because they were talking to each other about what was going on, and they've never done something like that. Mm-hmm. And they were connecting, but they couldn't get to the next step. They just couldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a portion where my student teacher, who's glorious, and I needed to shut it down and sit them down and say, we can't get to the, you can't get to the next part because you can't hear us. Mm-hmm. And we're the ones who are teaching you the next part. Mm-hmm. You literally don't know the next part. We'll come back to it another day. And we turned the lesson on its head because they needed to regain focus.
Yeah.
And they needed to be in an environment where they had to listen differently and not be quite as attached. However, I want that social interaction.
Yeah.
So we have to rebuild that, right?
But, yeah, getting there to a healthy place where there's balance.
Correct.
And it's difficult sometimes. I notice in my teaching, if I'm really in the midst of working out what's going to happen, how am I going to guide this learning? And I'm not on top of, I haven't been in a place to see the landscape long enough out into the distance of where we're going to make a good decision in a timely manner. Like, that's where the talking will start to flare up.
Yeah, that and wasn't this situation, yeah. But I've been to that.
Because you're like, party I could choose A, B, or C, and I don't know what to do.
Three milliseconds too long.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, everything is chaos. Not chaos, but they're talking.
Verbal.
Yeah. But it's interesting that I've even noticed that there are times where the class is paying attention and learning and making these sounds, like talking to each other and turning and talking, and they're saying things that are not connected, but the vibe of the classroom is so very palpably different than what I was used to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
In general, that's just so much more active, and it's just constantly, it's like the difference between a glass of water and a glass of like seltzer water.
Yeah.
Like, there's sparkle everywhere.
Yeah.
It's always fizzy.
Yeah, it feels spicy.
Yeah.
Like my nephew would say, spicy.
It's spicy water. Yeah. So in the classroom, you have that experience, and it's so much more, for me as a teacher, a little bit more anxiety inducing, because I'm always feeling like I have to hold that carefully.
Mm.
Because if you shake it up, it's going to overflow. And
yeah.
That's what happened with your kids when they literally went in a circle in the frog in the bucket that shook them up so much they couldn't.
Yeah.
You can't get the lid back on.
And they're fabulous children, right? They're fabulous. But we had to physically put the lid on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll come back to it, but had to take a right turn. And maybe it's a combination.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a combination of their lived experiences are so different. They're craving connection of their peers. But I also think they're not aware sometimes that they're even making sound. I mean, you can say to children sometimes, could you please stop? And they're like, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an argument.
Mm-hmm.
They are really unaware.
Yeah.
There are those kids who will argue it, but they're really, truly unaware that they did it. Like, trust me, I wouldn't have said something if you hadn't. And I'm trying to do this. Caring means, I'm going to go back. My principal is amazing. And she will often say discipline means to teach. So we're trying to teach another way. We're not trying to make this be crime and punishment. It's really to teach, like, how can we be in this space together and be more successful? I wouldn't have taken my time to tell you were humming, which was distracting to the people around you, if you weren't humming. You know what I mean? And if you have a whole room that's doing this, they're not getting what they need yet. So how do we get them back on track? You know, and then how do you do performances with those kids?
Yeah.
Or informances with those kids? Or take them to be leaders in another classroom because they've learned something cool and they want to share. But you don't want to share with a group that's undisciplined in a way for sharing.
Yeah.
You know, there's etiquette.
So I think we've unpacked what people are observing.
Yeah, what they're seeing, yeah.
I'm curious, what are some go-to strategies for acknowledging what's going on with your students in these situations, and what feels like reparation? Like, how do you start to repair what's going on so that it heads in a direction that's more mutually beneficial to you as an educator and the learner?
Yeah, I think that's a lot, right? And it depends on the kids. And it depends on how old they are and their experiences. And there's just a lot to sort of unpack and take apart. People love that word unpack or hate that word unpack. But this is some unpacking
usually
going on.
Yes. Uh-huh.
People have visceral responses to that word. But for me, you know, we have classroom signals and things like that. That, you know, believe it or not, I have a piano signal with all of my, you know, piano prowess. But at the same time, there are also other visual signals we use. And when we get past the point that those are working, then something else needs to happen. And it's not me lose my cool.
Oh, no.
Right? It has to be something that's benefiting the kids, that they understand what's going on is not okay. We've tried our normal X, Y, and Z. That's not working for you either. So either one or two things have to happen. And it depends on the activity. Mm-hmm. Are we going to have a group be an example? Is that a safe thing in that activity of or learning process? Or is it something where we need to shut it down, discuss what happened, move to the next thing? And when we get the next opportunity that we see them, give them another chance, because they weren't doing things with malice. They just weren't on track.
Yeah.
Okay, we tried this last time. We're going to give it another shot. We're remixing the groups. Or
right.
Or your groups are actually great, but what are the, you know, parameters that this activity needs to have? Mm-hmm. And talking them through it is really good because it gives them safe boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody needs a safe boundary. They need to know what's okay and what's not. And letting them, reminding them, not in a way of you did this and that was bad, but more like that wasn't working for what we were trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
We're going to give it another shot. But you always have to have those like tools in your back pocket. So what happens if that's where a great plan needs to come together and a lot of experience? Or if you know you're preparing, like for me, it's 16th note combinations.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have something ready that's going to support musical learning because I don't want that to be punitive.
Right.
It can't be you were bad, so this is what we're doing.
You can't. Yeah, you can't. Punishment cannot equal musically enriching experience. Like,
exactly.
Like, yeah. It's
because
like writing,
the whole class isn't doing
no.
that.
I think that's important too, is acknowledging the kids that are doing what you want them to do. So sometimes in the midst of it all, well, I want to come back to that, but what I wanted to say was something when you were talking, I was thinking what Crystal Pridmore was sharing, that one of the people in her world, Crystal Pridmore, is in San Diego in a...
And she's brilliant.
Is super brilliant. And I've been to her school. I've taught in the rooms where she teaches.
I would love that.
When I was a levels teacher, I taught there. And yeah, her rooms are beautifully, wonderfully charged musical spaces that kids are lucky to be a part of. And she has, her district is right up against the United States-Mexico border.
Right.
Like the gateway to Tijuana is down the road from where she lives.
Yeah.
Or not where she lives, but where she works. And she has some challenging family
situations.
Dynamics
yeah.
and students who are literally, some kids wake up in another country and come to her school.
Yeah.
So, but she said, you know, one of the things that she was working through were some frustrating things. And she was talking about, one of the leaders in her world said, you should get sad before you get mad.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about that. And so I was thinking about a classrooms of kids that are having a hard time focusing. I'm like, if I'm mad first, now I have an emotion.
That's about you.
Now I have an emotion that I have to get through, mm-hmm. like a jungle of emotion to get back out of myself,
mm-hmm.
just so I can be in the classroom again. And I feel like when I'm sad, it's like, oh, I'm sad that we're not able to keep going together. Like, we have to take a pause. And I'm sad that this is happening for them. And so a sad place is a place you can work from and acknowledge, like, I want to make a change. But anger is a place of, like, reactivity.
Yeah.
And you can't do any, you can't do any changing while you're in an anger state, at least not in a healthy way.
Right.
So one of the first things I think we are talking about is acknowledging. You know, you're saying acknowledge.
Yeah.
And so I like, one of my strategies is I'll just say, I'm noticing a lot of you are having some trouble not talking when I'm giving instructions.
That word notice is really powerful yeah. and can be leveraged in lots of situations,
yeah.
right? We want it not just to be us that notice,
yeah.
but we have to make them aware.
Or
so using
yeah.
modeling that language is
important. Or if you have a ringleader who's like spinning everyone up. You go over to them and stand beside them like, I notice you're having a really great time in music class today. And it's a private conversation just mm-hmm. between the you two. I'm so glad. I'm also noticing that some of the kids around you are getting a little distracted by what you're doing. I wonder if I could get you to just dial it back and be a little bit more chill. Because having a good time is great. But when what you're doing is getting into the silly, and if you're being silly, it's causing other people to be distracting. And then we're not going to be able to do as many cool things in music class.
Right.
So if you understand that you can just chill a little bit, not make as much sound, not talk to the people around you, and just remember that you can have a good time, but other people don't need to be constantly involved in your experience, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And then, you know, is there a way, do you think you can work on that for me? Just show me you can work on that and it'll be great. And then give them a fist bump and then they're back.
Right.
And like they go away with a plan they go away with acknowledged, like, I'm not here. Mr. B was not trying to yell at me.
Right.
He's in charge of a whole class full of kids, like, letting them know, like, I'm in charge of all these kids and I want everyone to have a good time. But what you're doing is getting in the way of that.
Yeah, it's that sense of care.
I wonder if I give you a chance to fix it, what would you change?
Right.
You know, and then when they have that experience, I've noticed that I usually don't have to talk to them again. Or I just give them the look. Like,
right, but at the same time, too, you're giving them opportunity to ponder,
yep,
rethink, and reengage, yeah, as opposed to be punitive.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying natural consequences don't need to happen. Sometimes a kid does need to sit and be an observer, mm-hmm, you know, but if you talk to them first and give them that chance, then their decisions are necessitating the next things. And that next thing is I get to stay and keep doing the cool things, yeah, or maybe I get a natural consequence. And if we're playing a game, I only get to be an observer. Then we'll have a little chat. And when you seem ready, the natural next consequence, because consequences are positive and negative, is I get to re-engage in the game again, mm-hmm, or the game is over and we're going to the next thing. And that may change some future behaviors, yeah, but it wasn't from a place of punishment. It was from a place of observation and learning. Yeah. And there's such a difference there.
And it's so powerful as well, because in our learning spaces, we want kids to come in the door super excited about activating their creativity.
Yeah.
Like,
we have a short amount of time to do it.
And we have a short amount of time. Yeah. And so they come there wired for that. And we have to know if they're going to, if we're doing our jobs, they're going to come sort of like what I said, like effervescent. They're going to, yeah, start having that sparky, spicy feeling in their body,
yeah,
because they're used to that there. They're programmed for it. And what we need to do is remember, okay, they're going to naturally try to go farther past what's acceptable on the spicy side.
Yeah.
So when your class gets a little spicy, how do you tell them, like, we need to dial it back? And then acknowledging that it's a good thing. But if your classes come in and they're dull and they don't talk and that's a whole different conversation.
Absolutely.
Right? So if I was going to choose which class I would rather have, I'll take the spicy class.
Yeah, I'll take spicy too.
And then, you know, sometimes it's like what Lisa said, it's just, okay, everyone sit. Go sit in your home spot. Mm-hmm. Who has an idea why they think Mr. B might have asked everyone to return to their home spot?
They raise
their hand. What do you think? Well, and they almost always will name a name.
Yep.
And then I said, oh, wait.
Oh, no.
Naming a name, is that going to help us? Is that going to make it worse? Probably going to make it worse. So how about if we just talk in general terms? Some kids. There were some kids that. Mm-hmm. And then they give them the sentence stem and they keep going. So then there were some kids that were talking when you were talking. There were some kids that when we were supposed to be doing something, they were not on task or whatever it was. Okay, so how does that affect all of us when some people make a decision? And then bringing it back to the idea of community, because we succeed. It's like that idea of Ubuntu, like,
yeah,
we're all succeeding together.
Correct.
And maybe that does destroy what I was going to do musically in my lesson, but I believe that my job first and foremost is to help these people become the best versions of the humans they can be.
Absolutely.
So when they come back and they have a context in another class of, oh, you know, when I say, I notice 7 of you were like right with me the whole time. So I try to always acknowledge the kids that are doing what I want. Mm-hmm. I saw 7 of you. I counted. Your eyes were on me. You were following the directions. You were with me. But there were some other kids that were making different choices. And that if I see that continue, I'm going to have to decide that we're not going to do this game that you were looking forward to doing, because I don't know that you're going to be able to play it safely. And if I can't trust that you'll be safe, then that's my job. I have to keep you safe. And if I can't keep you safe, then we can't do the thing.
Right. And kids know whether you're in it with them in the room or not.
Yeah.
Right. They are keenly, keenly aware of, I know that I'm valued enough to be paid attention to. I think that's what it boils down to,
yeah,
right? And Mr. B or Mrs. Semsi, you know, they've done this a few times. Mm-hmm. And so they know what they're doing, yeah, and that they can be with me in the process.
Yeah.
So I think the secret to the sauce is it's always balance. Sometimes it's a little bit of this and it's a little bit of that. But if you're giving balance, eventually it comes to the point where it should be. I just think that right now we're working with kids at different development levels and different maturity levels, that it's coming out in these verbal ways.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily malicious. They're not trying to derail the lesson
at all.
They're not even aware.
Yeah, I feel like there is that level of awareness that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's our job to bring that to the fore. Yeah. And then the other thing I was thinking is, well, we are in this community, this you mentioned the word balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, one of the things that that changed over the course of my career was I used to think that I was supposed to be there and the kids were the ones that were always supposed to be getting the benefit. And
right.
then I realized, like, wait, this is not sustainable.
Mm-mm.
I need to win here too. So now I've changed. And you've heard me say this, like, in the way that we work at ASIM, like, if everyone doesn't win, then we don't do it. Like,
right.
it's my job as a leader is everyone wins.
Yeah.
And that includes me.
Right.
So in my classroom, if I say to the students, this things aren't going well, and I'm feeling like it's a win for a lot of kids who are just, like, talking and having a grand old time. But it feels like a loss for me and a bunch of others. And that doesn't sit right with me because mm-hmm. we should all get to win. And there's a way to do it, and we all know how.
Yeah.
So if you – and they remember then, because that idea of us winning together, like Mr. B should win too. This should not be – I should not have to go away, have you leave my classroom, and I feel like I've been disrespected and I've been chewed up and spit out. Because you wouldn't want me to do that to you.
Right. And that also, like you're talking about, like that happened over time, right?
Yeah.
I'm old enough to say that when I was a kid, the teacher, it was very authoritarian
mm-hmm.
as opposed to authoritative. And there's a difference,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so authoritarian is you're blindly doing regardless,
pretty much everything,
you know,
is because I said so.
Exactly. And I cannot stand those words more than a lot of things if people know me, because
wait,
I said so.
Which is worse, unpack the standards or because I said so?
In my world, it's definitely because I said so, because I'm going to be like, watch me. Like, I'm going to do the opposite.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that means there's kids in the room who are like that too. But authoritative just means that there's a plan and you're the person that ultimately it boils down to keeping everybody safe. And of course, we want the kids to be in community of saying we're all keeping each other safe. But you really are, as the teacher, the one that's watching all of that happen. And the mm-hmm. ultimate responsibility is with
mm-hmm.
you. And that's authoritative.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that seriously means teaching the kids sometimes things they're not realizing they're doing, and sometimes encountering situations they've never done before, you know, and that's okay, because our classrooms are supposed to be places we take risks, and that risk needs to be in, like, measured, safe ways.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these kids, they're talking and they don't even realize that it's going to stop their own personal growth.
Yeah.
They're, let alone their neighbors, you know, in the classroom.
Yeah. When you were mentioning about authority, I always had this, there's certain people who I've worked with and worked for over my career who have a very unhealthy perception of authority and power.
Yeah.
And the authority is you have a certain amount of institutional agency. You have the institution says that you get to make decisions and what you say goes. It's very hierarchy of
mm-hmm.
Chain of command kind of stuff. In a classroom, the teacher has the authority. And we have power, but the students have power as well.
Absolutely.
And not acknowledging the power that your students have is a mistake that will
burn you every time.
Every time.
I was going to say burn your biscuits.
Yeah.
You said eat your lunch, but yes.
So the students are exercising their power when they're talking the
yeah.
way that they're exercising their individualistic power. And the issue that we're talking around today is when students are choosing to exercise their power in a way that doesn't help the group.
Correct.
Is really the issue. And so, and I've worked for people who have authority, but they don't remember that I have power in the relationship. So they say you have to do this because I said so.
Yeah.
And my response is, well, I'll put it on my list, And I'll, you know, and then when I forget about it and you remind me, my response is going to be, thank you for the reminder. Right? Like, but so my power is, you can't force me to do something that I don't want to do until we have a relationship that's
correct.
That's in a balance of my power and your power help each other.
Yeah.
And when that happens, when the person comes to me and says, you know, I really need this. I have a report to write and I need your input on this report because what I put in this report is going to affect funding or is going to affect the way that we make a decision about scheduling or whatever. I'm in for that. Like,
sure.
You're working for me and my student. You're working for my students and me, and you need this from me, not just because I said so, but because it has a part of how our powers work together. I'm a partner with you now.
Right. So when you boil that into the classroom,
and when the students realize that their power is a partnership that gets them positive experiences, and you as a teacher receive positive experiences by working within that power structure, your authority doesn't need to be exercised nearly as much.
And I think it's important to remember that, you know, if you have those classes, in some ways you may need to embrace it, right? So in what ways is it healthy for them to be talking?
Mm-hmm.
And then balance that with helping them build their sustained focus in other ways. And that's like an inch by inch situation depending on their maturity level and their previous experiences. So how do we grow them into being a learner that can be more focused in different ways, but also doesn't feel like their ideas have been squelched? Because little Lisa had written on a report card once by a gifted teacher, I hope someday she breaks out of her shell. They got that, but it had to be in a healthy way, right? So how do we do that for our kids? We don't want to squash their voices to the point where they won't ever open up to us, because that's not healthy either.
And I think there are certain kids that this is no longer a conclusion that we can draw as a possibility.
Yeah, right?
But I do think you have a point about accepting that this is something they need. So how do you build a structure for, let me give an example. Say I ask students, like, say we are going to talk about monarch butterflies.
Sure.
I have a lesson about monarch butterflies, and we're going to have a musical experience with them. One of the things I might do with a chatty, with a spicy class is put a picture of a monarch butterfly on the screen, have their attention, and say, I want you to talk to three other people in this room. You have to leave your seat. You cannot stay where you are. You must talk to three other people, and you must find four new things about butterflies that you never knew before that someone else is going to tell you. And then let them go. And then when I ring this bell, or when I hit my singing bowl, or when you hear the dinger on
the piano,
you have
chords
to sit down in your home spot and you have to listen. You have to look at me, and I'm going to listen, and I'm going to choose four people to share.
Right.
And you're going to be one of the ones that share. So now they have motivation. They're going to have a voice for the whole. They're going to be able to share their voice back and forth. Everyone's going to be heard. Everyone's going to be seen. Everyone's going to get to travel around, and they're going to have a structure for returning, and they're going to know that there's going to be a benefit where if they feel like they have something really valuable, they could offer to share.
Right. And so you gave safe boundaries.
Right. And what happens then is during that time where they're all moving around, I have a contract with myself that I stay out of it entirely.
Me too.
Not my place. I didn't ask them to talk to me. My directions did not include me. My directions and what I'm doing is I'm watching who, when someone is walking up to someone else, is turning away and walking the other direction. And when, you know, now I know, okay, there's a relationship that I need to help heal there.
Yeah.
And, or whatever it is that's going on, or two kids are only talking to each other. I need to go over to them and say, remind me what the expectations were.
Right.
And then they say, have you visited anyone else?
Right.
Who do you think would really appreciate a visit from you? Like, look around. Oh, there's three kids over there that need – you choose any of those three. That kind of thing.
Right.
So then I think structuring their need to share, their need to talk. And if they do a really great job, like at the end of the class, like, or some point in the class, just give them a chance to talk to your neighbors about whatever you want while I work on this.
Absolutely.
And then I'm going to ring the bell, and then we're going to do a thing. So in that moment where you can't think and you have A, B, and C – turn to your class and say, you know what? I need a few minutes. I know you have some stuff you want to talk to your friends about. Go ahead and do it. When I'm ready, I'll put my hand up and we'll keep going.
Well, what do we do when we get to a professional development?
Well, that's
in
a whole
the workshop sometimes. The first thing we do is we're talking and the presenter needs to wait until it gets quiet because these are people that we're excited to be in the same room with.
Yeah.
We have to realize that connection is human.
Yeah.
And it's normal, but I really think like it comes back, if we circle it all the way back around, is they've gone from these little worlds that were so different, none of us have experienced before.
Ugh.
And there's a technological side to their lives that mm-hmm. we didn't grow up with. Mm-hmm. We were playing the Oregon Trail. So like...
Freaking dysentery.
I know, every time. And, you know, and so we're working on getting them to be learners in healthy ways, but we also need to embrace their human side.
Yeah.
So whether that helps our listeners today or makes them feel more seen, yeah. Just know you're not alone out there. But I,
absolutely not.
You know.
It happens to us too.
It happens everywhere, but maybe setting some safe boundaries or working into the lesson, some of that talking, but then also working in the sustained focus may help. But if it doesn't, do you have an idea that really works for your kids? Mm-hmm. You can always reach out to us. You know, head to asm.org and find our emails, or it's just our first names. It would be drew@asm.org or lisa@asm.org, and let us know what works for you. And maybe we'll have a chat about that as well.
And we are keeping a list of elemental music and movement conundrums.
Oh, yes.
And this was one of them.
Yeah.
Like, we started with, I'm always overwhelmed, and now we just had, my kids won't stop talking. So I wonder what our next one would be. If you have a conundrum for us to consider, we're always considering conundrums here at ASM.
Exactly. And conundrum makes it feel a little less scary and frustrating, right? But
we'd love to hear what you have to say. So drop us an email with your suggestion for what we could talk about next. And we love that you're a part of our world. We're grateful for your listening. We love you, we support you, and we're always cheering you on.
Always. All right, bye everybody.
Bye everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of ASM's Helpcast. The American Center for Elemental Music and Movement's mission is to support and spread the joy of music and movement education. Did you like this episode? Rate it in your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to subscribe. Now, hop on over to www.acemm.org to learn more about scholarships, grants, and professional development opportunities through ASM. See you next episode.